Proverbs chapter 25, beginning in verse 1. These also are Proverbs of Solomon, which the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah, copied. And so King Hezekiah, his men, they copied some of the, they discovered 250 years after Solomon, they discovered some of his Proverbs and they copied them. And so these were some of those Proverbs. It is a glory, it is the glory of God to conceal a matter, but the glory of kings is to search out a matter. It's the glory of God to conceal a matter. One of the glorious things about God is that He can't reveal everything about Himself to us. And that's one of the greatest sources of our frustration, isn't it? How often I'm asked that question, why does God, or how come God? Like, you know, I mean, the questions are innocent, but you got a wrong number if you ask me that. If He's not telling you, I can't tell you. But I mean, it's the same way in my own walk with the Lord. There's so little I understand. And what He doesn't tell me that perhaps He could tell me, if He told me that, it would just raise even more questions. And one of the old sayings about God, and it's a wonderful saying, and that is, a God that is small enough to understand isn't big enough to worship. You're either going to have God be the big guy that He is, I mean, just infinite, and have to deal with the fact that you're not going to understand everything about Him. Much worse to understand everything, because then what? He's smaller than my mind. Then He's smaller than me. And then I'm not interested in worshiping Him. And, you know, so He's not worthy of being worshiped. And so it's the glory of God to conceal a matter. He can't reveal everything about Himself. The infinite can only take the finite, that is us, so far before the finite starts having smoke come out of their ears. We can only carry it so far. But the glory of kings is to search out a matter. At the other end of the spectrum is the human king. And it's his glory to confess, I don't know everything. I'm not so smart. And so I better search this out and I better learn about this circumstance or situation and then act upon it. And so the necessity of fully investigating a matter and not being afraid to admit that I don't know everything. Even when someone asks you for directions, men seem to have a problem with that, don't they? Ask them for directions. Yeah, it's right down this way, and then the foggiest idea where it is. Just, it's okay not to know everything. We had a hunch you didn't anyway. Verse 3, as the heavens for height and the earth for depth, so the heart of kings is unsearchable. Well, a king is the guy that holds the top spot. He's up at the top. And we have a saying in our culture that's what? It's lonely at the top. One of the reasons it's lonely at the top is you can't explain. There's nobody else that can understand what you see, what you understand, what you're in the middle of. It's just the way that it is. Nobody else can understand it. Nobody but God. And so there is this place here. The heart of the kings is unsearchable. But praise the Lord that He does understand. And you can take everything to Him and receive the wisdom and the comfort that we need. So a beautiful, beautiful proverb for those of you who are, you know, the head of anything. Take away the dross, that is the impurities, from silver, and then it'll go to the silversmith for jewelry. In other words, it'll be valuable then. You take away what's you know, worthless or impure. Take away the wicked men from before the king. Get wicked counselors away from the king or away from the president and his throne. That wasn't a cheap shot. I was just trying to relate it to our culture. But listen, you take it wherever you want. Take away the wicked from before the king, and his throne will be established in righteousness. In other words, remove the wicked counselors from before the head guy, and his kingdom's going to become valuable. And so the necessity of that. I don't care how big shot of a person is or how high they are in terms of power or whatever, we are influenced by the people that we surround ourselves with. So don't surround yourself with worthless people or wicked people, especially when you have a position of responsibility that can affect a lot of people. And so just good wisdom. Do not exalt yourself in the presence of the king, and do not stand in the place of great men. Now, Jesus spoke about this proverb, probably had this in mind when he gave the parable of the guy that came into the banquet. And, you know, you had your head tables up towards the platform area, then you had your tables a long ways from the platform. So the guy comes in and he says, "Hey, I'm Mr. Hotshot, so I'll go up and I'll sit. I'm worthy of all of these, you know, big guys, and I'll go sit right up in the front." Jesus said, "Don't do that, because if you exalt yourself up there and then someone more honorable than you come in, then you're going to force the guy that's running the feast to come up and tap you on the shoulder and say, what are you doing in these seats? These are the $750 seats. What are you doing up here? You know, we got the 15 buck seats back there." And then not only do you get moved from it, but it's obvious to everyone what's happening. In other words, if I exalt myself, sooner or later I'm going to get humbled. Haven't you discovered that in your life? Yes, you have. Don't you be going silent on me. There just is that point where we try to exalt ourselves and then we end up humbled, and it's good, because then we go, okay, I'm going to try not to do that again, you know, at least for a month. And so just the warning, don't exalt yourself, and that's the key. And the presence of the king, to stand in the place of great men, it is better that he says to you, "Come up here." And that's the great thing. He says, "What are you doing?" "Oh, get up here. And I've got a seat for you up here." "Yeah, all right. Yeah, everybody look up. Like to see that." Everyone to see all that going on. And then that you should be put in lower in the presence of the prince whom your eyes have seen. In other words, the guy that you're trying to impress. It's really not impressive if you get bumped from that place of prominence. Do not go hastily to court. In this proverb, the key is on the word hastily. You know, don't go running off half-cocked. You don't take someone to court before you know all of the issues. And Matthew chapter 18 tells us that if we have a problem with another member of the body of Christ, go to that person and just talk with them and try and sort the thing out, because so often I've got it misjudged. You know, I think, well, they're thinking this and they're thinking here, and then I'll do this. And you go and talk to them and you find out it's entirely different from how we thought it was. And so he says, don't go taking them to court hastily or before you've talked to them when your neighbor, for what will you do in the end? In other words, when it goes to court and your neighbor has put you to shame, debate your case with your neighbor himself, and do not disclose the secret to another, lest he hears it and expose your shame and your reputation is ruined. In other words, if you take him to court and then the judges go and talk to him and they learn things that are detrimental to your case that you could have learned by simply talking to him yourself, you spare yourself a lot of embarrassment if you take care of it when it's just a small little thing rather than, you know, making a big deal out of it. And then everyone looks and say, he lost his case. And why in the world would he push it that far without talking to the person and getting the facts that we easily got from the person by talking to him? And then our reputation is hurt. And so... we want to be careful that our reputation as Christians aren't ruined. A word fitly spoken. I mean, when you say the right thing, you remember that when that happens? Yeah. It's like apples of gold in settings of silver. Now, a lot of their art was, you know, it was done with the jewelry and the silver and the gold. In other words, when you had apples of gold set in, you know, a setting of silver, beautiful, valuable. That's what he's saying here. And so that a word is valuable and beautiful, the right word spoken at the right time. Like an earring of gold in an ornament of fine gold is the wise reprover to the obedient ear. And so when a wise man comes to us, or a wise person, and they reprove us, we're doing something wrong, we're missing it somewhere. And they come up to us, and they reprove us, They rebuke us for it. If we listen to that rebuke, then that rebuke becomes like a golden earring in our ear. In other words, it makes us more beautiful. Makes us more beautiful. And a rebuke from a wise man, when it creates a change in my life, it makes my life more beautiful. There's a lot of times where we'll look at, you know, a lot of times there's a tendency even within the body of Christ to look at a life, and everyone knows that there's an area or two in that person's life that just keeps goofing them up, and it needs to get turned around, and it needs to get changed because it's just messing them up, and nobody will say anything. The wise man, to come alongside and just say, have you considered this, or would you, you know, think about this? And then when it's spoken, you go, you know, you're right on that. And then all of a sudden, people look at that life and say, man, it's changed. Look at the beauty of their life. And nobody knows that it was a wise word spoken by a wise person into that life. It makes our lives even more beautiful if we're willing to listen. Like the cold of snow in the time of harvest. Well, this is a good time to hit verse 13 because it's harvest time in the valley. And one of the reasons we know it's harvest time is because it's 115 degrees and doesn't cool down at night and those kinds of things. And so at harvest time, if you've ever done agricultural work, what happens? You get thirsty. One of the things that we did as a kid, my twin brother and I, all through high school, is we cut grapes and we picked prunes for our school clothes. And I'll tell you, we'd start, get on our little Schwinn bicycles, start at about 4:30 in the morning and ride out to the orchard in the north end of Napa and the old Bruno Ranch out there. It's all subdivisions now. It's a story all over. But anyway, couldn't turn down the money. And so we'd head out there, and then we'd work about till about 2 in the afternoon. It'd be all hot, just ready to finish. And we'd make a beeline to the 7-Eleven and get the biggest Slurpee in existence in that day. It was just a hot, so just refreshing, something to cool us down. And so like the cold of snow, nice cold drink during the harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him, not to those who receive the messenger, to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his master. There's nothing that feels better to a master than to send a messenger, and that messenger is faithful to deliver what he said to say. Whoever boasts falsely of giving is like the clouds and the wind without rain. So here you have the guy that says, listen, I'm going to send you a check in the mail for $1,000. And then he doesn't do it. He boasted falsely. Well, he says it's like clouds and wind without rain. In other words, the promise, if it doesn't produce something, it's worse than if it had never been promised. You know, you come to me and you tell me, I'm going to send you $1,000 in the mail. Listen, I was fine before you told me. But now you told me that, and I got it spent before I get it. And now it doesn't come, and now it's worse than you if you'd never promised to me, never made it. So better not to promise than to promise and have it be an empty promise that you don't fulfill. You remember the real bad drought that we had in the 70s in California? I mean, what was it, about 3 years or 4 years, these clouds had just come, they'd come through, all right, here comes the rain, you know, and Lake Berryessa up in the Napa area was down a little puddle, you know, up there and in all the different places, and it looked like this is going to be the one, and Peter Giddings on Channel 7, you know, he'd say, here it comes, it's going to be a deluge, I'm telling you, and then it just blow right on by, and then no rain, and then they were only letting us take showers every second week or whatever it was when they were doing things that we were younger then. Maybe we weren't wasn't a requirement. We were just happy to do it that way. So, but better not to promise than to promise and not keep that promise because you get our hopes up. By long forbearance, a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle tongue breaks a bone. I love this proverb. A ruler is the guy that has all of the power. And you think, how in the world can you move the guy that has all of the power? And Solomon is writing here and saying, even the most powerful people in the world can be moved through patience and a gentle tongue. Patience and a gentle tongue will always accomplish more than anger and a harsh tongue. And sometimes that's the hardest thing, is just to remain patient in the situation. Patient and patient and patient and gentle in the situation. You think, this isn't going anywhere. It is harder to fight against patience and gentleness than against anger any time. And gentleness, it breaks a bone. That's how effective it is. It can no more be ignored than a broken bone. It's effective. It's effective. Stay patient and a gentle tongue. It breaks a bone and it will persuade even a ruler. Have you found honey? Eat only as much as you need, lest you be filled with it and vomit. Just good dietary advice here on this. We would say today, don't overdo a good thing. You know, there you can overdo even a good thing and end up wanting to vomit. So if you just, you know, I got out day after Halloween or whatever, harvest break, you know, as a kid, you'd just eat all that candy, to leaving as a, you know, as a kid, you'd get sick. There's apparently a true story about a dad. He had several kids and they felt like the dream of their life, they would be in the millennium if all they were ever forced to eat was ice cream. That sounded all right. But a whole bunch of ice cream. For breakfast, they had ice cream. Oh, ice cream, yeah. Ice cream for breakfast. All excited about that, and they ate that. And then they wanted a snack, so Dad gave them some more ice cream. And then lunch came. Another big bowl of ice cream. In the afternoon snack, he gave them another bowl of ice cream. Dinner came, and then in another bowl of ice cream. But before one day was over, sick of ice cream, we don't want to see ice cream again, you know, can I have a sandwich or whatever it might be. Even, you know, those things, moderation is important. And so that's what it's teaching. Even the best things in life, you can get sick of it if you overdo it. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. You know, just good advice. You may be the best neighbor in the whole world, but if you come over to my house 3 times a day, I'm going to kill you. You know, sooner or later, something is going to happen to you. You can be the most wonderful human being in the world, but sooner or later, you're going to wear out your welcome. And so don't do it. Just, you know, keep that under control, that area. Now, one of the nice things is that it's never true of God. We can go to Him anytime. And He's just thrilled to death to see us again and to hear from us. And so, but it is good counsel in the natural realm, you know. A man who bears false witness against his neighbor, he lies against him in court, is like a club, a sword, and a sharp arrow. In other words, all those things do harm. And a guy that lies against you in a court of law does great harm. Confidence in an unfaithful man or an unreliable man in time of trouble is like a bad tooth. Painful. Painful. And like a foot out of joint. Painful. You send an unreliable man to represent you, and you'll wish you hadn't. And you'll wish you hadn't as much as a bad tooth and a foot out of joint. Like one who takes away a garment in cold weather. So the guy that takes away the guy's jacket in cold weather. In other words, insensitivity to another person's condition. And like vinegar on soda. You put vinegar on soda and you're going to create agitation. They don't go together. Is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. So here you are, you're going through a trial or you're in a difficult thing or some bad news has come to you and someone comes in and wants to sing little songs to you. You're just going to agitate a person doing that. In other words, again, there has to be sensitivity to the condition of the person that we're involving ourselves with. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. So now you've got an enemy here, and he's fallen on hard times. In other words, he's vulnerable. You can do him harm at this point. You may want to. The Bible says that if your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For so will you heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you. All right. You read that and you say, wow, all right, coals of fire on his head. Here's some more bread. What's that all about? And here's another big, let's break out the lemonade for you, buddy. Now, Paul quotes this in Romans chapter 12. And now imagine a heap of coals of fire on your head. In other words, if you got a little, like a little metal crown, and it's all full of hot coals, you're not going to be able to ignore that. That's all you're going to be thinking about. And then the Lord is saying, it's the same thing. When we repay good for evil, whatever they may, appear to be outwardly towards us, God says, trust me. It's like coals of fire on their head. They cannot ignore what you've done. And not only does it do a good work in them to get them to turn, but then in Paul writes in Romans, and he says, do not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. And it keeps us from falling down to the level of the world and repaying evil for evil. And so there'll be that conviction that they won't be able to escape. God's weapons are very different from the weapons that we would choose. They're much more effective. The north wind blows forth rain, as it brings in rain, and a backbiting tongue is going to bring in an angry countenance. In other words, you slander someone or you backbite them, and pretty soon they're going to hear about it, and your backbiting is going to bring an angry countenance your way, an angry face your way, the person you slandered. It is better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a fighting woman, contentious woman. Again, Solomon, he brings this whole thing up here. And I was reading a newsletter recently, and Solomon, he had the 300 wives and the 700 concubines. And they had, I guess they were talking with kids or something about this, and one of the kids said that Solomon had 300 wives and 700 porcupines. And apparently he did. Apparently he did, based upon some of these proverbs that he has here. As cold water to a weary soul, refreshing, so is good news from a far country. In other words, you're a long way from home, news comes to you from home, and it's good news. It's refreshing. What can top that? Good news from heaven. Good news from heaven. The gospel of Jesus Christ. A righteous man who falters before the wicked is like a murky spring in a polluted well. And so when a righteous man or woman, they're doing the right thing, they're living for the Lord and all, and then they compromise. And if we compromise, then it pollutes our witness. It pollutes our lives and it ruins our witness. And so the encouragement not to falter before the wicked or to compromise with them. It's not good to eat much honey, so to seek one's glory is not glory. In other words, again, if you hear Solomon's saying, here's two things that make you sick. Eating too much honey and listening to a guy brag about himself. And both of them will do that. If you ever listen to someone just go on and on and on about themselves and all this and everything and their biggest fan, pretty soon it makes everybody sick. And so those two things do that. Verse 28. Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. In other words, a man that's without discipline in his life, he's got no walls. Satan can hit him with anything and everything. One of the things that we have to be careful about today, because even within the body of Christ, people seem to be trying to sort out what it means to be a Christian at times. There's a great tendency today that I think to consider anything that is discipline in nature, where it means saying no to something and saying yes to God and all. So often that's characterized as legalism. Anything that's hard is legalism today. You got to read the pastoral epistles in other places. In order to finish this race as a Christian, it's going to require discipline. It does require discipline. And if there is no rule over our spirit by the Spirit of God, then Satan just says, all right, they got 52 cards here, and I've got one of 52 ways to wipe this guy out. I can hit him with anything because he's vulnerable on every front. As snow, chapter 27, in summer, and rain and harvest, in other words, those are things that don't go together, so honor is not fitting for a fool. In other words, it's just never going to happen. A fool is never going to get honor. Like a flitting sparrow and like a flying swallow. Say that really fast. In other words, those they won't land on you. So a curse without cause shall not alight. In other words, he's saying here, can you ever get a swallow to land on you? Can you ever get a sparrow to land on you? They won't do it, will they? And so he's saying, don't worry if somebody curses you, tries to put a curse on you. And then, as he says, for a curse without cause. In other words, as we just live a right life, as we just live for the Lord, don't have to worry about any kind of curses at all. They can take all the voodoo dolls and walk under as many ladders as you feel like, let as many black cats run across. Do anything you want on Friday the 13th. I mean, we are serving the Lord. There's no place for superstition. No place for superstition at all in the life of a Christian. It's not going to land on us. Our Lord is bigger than anything that would come against us. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, both of those are means of directing an animal, and a rod for the fool's back. In other words, that's the only thing that an animal understands, and sometimes a rod on the back is the only thing that a fool will understand. Much better to be able to hear and learn. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. Well, that's very obvious. Verse 6. It looks like a contradiction, doesn't it, in verse 4 and 5. In other words, what Solomon is saying here, he's saying that we have to allow wisdom to determine which action we're going to take in a given situation. There are some situations that we're in, as he describes there in verse 4, where you don't argue with a guy that's a fool. Don't give any substance to his argument by entering into an argument with him. And so don't answer him quarters tall. Don't get all big veins in your neck yelling at him and all of that kind of stuff. Don't even give him that much. He's a fool. You just let it go. You just walk away. It's okay. He's a fool. And you walk away from it. But then there's another time where we need to answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. In other words, if our silence makes him misunderstand us into thinking that we're approving of the foolish thing that he's saying, then there's a place to step in and say, no, I don't agree with you on that. But we don't come down to their level. He who sends a message by the hand of a fool cuts off his own feet and drinks violence. In other words, you only hurt yourself. You pick a fool to send a message for you. Like the legs of the lame that hang limp, in other words, they're useless on a lame man, is a proverb in the mouth of fools. You can teach him all of the wisdom in the world, but he isn't going to know how to apply it. He may know all of the proverbs, but doesn't have the slightest idea how to apply them to life. In other words, they're useless in his mouth. Like one who binds a stone in a sling is he who gives honor to a fool. Now imagine having a sling and then putting a rock in that sling and then sewing the sling shut. It wouldn't make any sense at all, would it? I mean, you make the whole thing useless. And so the point is that if you give honor to a fool, you've wasted it. It's just useless. Like a thorn that goes into the hand of a drunkard, does harm to his hand, is a proverb in the mouth of fools. He's just going to do harm with it. He won't know how to apply it. The great God who formed all things gives the fool his hire and the transgressor his wages. Nobody has the slightest idea what that verse means, and so I'm not going to tackle it. That verse is translated 10 different ways, and verse 11. This is one I understand better. As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. And so if you've ever watched, I don't mean to be deliberately gross, if you've ever watched a dog throw up and a couple hours later, come back, what's it do? Sniffs it and eats it again. Doesn't it? Now listen, if it made you sick the first time, you know, the odds are it's going to make you sick the second time. And this is why Peter writes, and he talks about the backslider being as a dog that returns to its vomit. In other words, if it made you sick the first time, it's not going to be any different when you go back to it. No matter what sin is out there, no matter what the world is like, one of the reasons that we're Christians is that what we were involved in, what was it was all about, ultimately, it made us sick. But the world has fancy kind of ways of doing some neat commercials about it, and then they put some bright lights around it, and some dancing girls, and dancing guys, and all of that kind of stuff. And then we think, well, you know, maybe it's improved. I've been after this time. And you go back, and it's going to make you as sick as ever. And so just the wisdom that we can learn from dogs. Don't return, the folly, it's no better the second time around. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? In other words, he's proud. There's more hope for a fool than for him. More hope. Pride is a worse condition than being a fool. There's hope for the fool to gain understanding concerning his condition. Nothing harder than getting a proud man to recognize his condition. But God can do it, does it in our lives all the time, doesn't he? The slothful man says, there's a lion in the road, a fierce lion in the streets. In other words, he's calling his boss in the morning, and he's a lazy bum. And so rather than going to work, he says, I can't come to work. There's a lion in the street. There's a fierce lion in the road. There's no lion out there. All he's good at is making excuses. Again, just all he's good at is making excuses. He invents difficulties for himself. And some people just look at things that way, wild excuses not to work. As a door turns on its hinges, how does a door turn on its hinges? Back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth. And so does the lazy man turn on his bed. Back and forth, and back and forth. He doesn't need any more sleep, but he's not getting out of that bed. He's just back and forth, never gets up. All kinds of movement, but no progress. Just like that door, never gets anywhere, just back and forth. Solomon, I think he had an employee problem there too at his thing. He said, the slothful man buries his hand in the bowl. He's going to put his hand there to eat, and he's too tired to bring it to his mouth. The sluggard, lazy guy, is wiser in his own eyes than seven men that can speak sensibly. Their capacity for self-deception. You know, I'm not lazy, it's this and it's that. And the ability to justify their condition. Now, remember Jesus, and I think it was in Matthew chapter 25, we're just in there, where Jesus, the talents were given to the three men, and the one guy took the one talent and he buried it, and then he was going to have to give an account for it. And he said, I didn't do much with it. I just put in this napkin and I buried it, because I heard you are a hard man. And you reap where you haven't sown, and all of these things. And so I didn't do anything with it. It's the same thing right here. Just a lot of excuses. And then the Lord turned to him and said, you know, you wicked and lazy servant. And so he cut through all of the excuses there. And the sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. And so you can send seven sensible men to talk to him, and he'll wear them all out. He won't wear them out working, but he'll wear them out making excuses for his condition. And, you know, one of the things you just have to accept the fact in life is that there are lazy people in life. That's just the way that it is. He who passes by, but a Christian is never to be so. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel that isn't his own, you know, you're not minding your own business, is like one who takes a dog by the ears. Now, you ever lifted a German Shepherd by the ears? What's going to happen to you? You're going to get bit, aren't you? You're going to get bit. Every time you're going to get bit. And when a person gets into a situation, sticks their nose into a situation that's none of their business, what ends up happening? You end up getting bit. I end up getting bit. The classic illustration, of course, is law enforcement. This is their world. They constantly have to enter in all day long into these kinds of situations, you know, that's not their own, but they've got to come in for whatever reason. And it's the most dangerous call that they go on. Why? Because as soon as they get there, both parties then turn on them. That's what will happen to you. You get in a situation that's none of your business, you'd be surprised how quickly both of them turn on you, and you'll end up, you'll rather pick up a dog by both ears. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, "I was only joking." Now, there's a couple of different meanings for this particular proverb, and I think both of them are very good. These two verses can speak of the practical joker who always goes too far. And there can be some of us, and I think it's a tendency of some men more than women. Maybe, you know yourselves better than I do. But so often there's that practical joker that just does not know when to stop. And you just push it and push it and push it until someone is harmed. And here is a rebuke to that. Don't do it. Don't push it that far. And it can also be a rebuke to the man who maliciously on purpose, not practical joking, but does harm to his neighbor, and then when he gets busted, then he says, "I was only joking." And our legal system is full of that today. I mean, there's the out and out caught in the crime, wrong as can be, but you know, by the time it gets to the courts, there's all kinds of excuses made up. And so it's just a rebuke to both of those things. You know, don't be a practical joker. Or if you are, be very careful about how far you go with it. And then don't use this as an excuse to get off when you've done wrong. "I was only joking, you know, so give me a lesser sentence. Where there is no wood, the fire goes out." In other words, the fire needs fuel to keep on going. "And where there is no talebearer, a gossiper, then strife ceases." And so the only way that strife can keep going is for there to be gossipers. "As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife." In other words, a contentious man will only make things worse. He'll only make the fire worse. "The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles." Gossip, it's very tasty. We like it. Our flesh likes it. But it goes down into the inmost being. It becomes a part of me and it affects me. And so we need to stay away from it. "Fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthenware covered with silver dross." And so it's talking about a piece of pottery covered with silver dross, or the impurity taken off of silver, usually lead. Now you take a piece of pottery and you put that lead, you know, immediately after you've gotten it off of the fire, and you put that lead on that pot, and for a while, what? Looks good. Looks good. Looks like silver for a while. Looks okay for a while. But ultimately, it ends up being revealed as worthless. And that's the kind of man, the fervent lips with a wicked heart. In other words, the man that is the great orator, the man that is able to stir up the multitudes, to stir up the people, and yet he's got a wicked heart. And the Lord is saying, be careful of that kind of person, because it won't be long before you'll realize you're not dealing with anything good, but you're dealing with something worthless. In our century, again, classic example, Hitler. Tremendous capacity, fervent lips, tremendous capacity to impart vision and stir the hearts of many people, but his heart was a wicked heart, and it wasn't long before, you know, look good for a short time, but time revealed it to be worthless and worse than worthless. Don't go for fervent lips with a work, worth a wicked heart. Verse 24, he who hates disguises it with his lips. In other words, the hypocrite, the one that flatters you to your face, and then the whole time in their heart they're saying, I hate your guts. Sorry, but that's the way it is sometimes. And lays up deceit within himself. And so says one thing to your face, his heart is an entirely different thing. When he speaks kindly to you, and literally it means when he speaks, when his voice is gracious. And sometimes, that kind of a person that's got that, they can have a hatred for you or they want to do you in the first chance they get. But boy, they can sure get that little spiritual voice down, can't they? You'd think they're just a little harmless church mouse and everything. They get that little spiritual voice and all. And they talk to you like that, and then, man, inside, there's big trouble, for there are seven abominations in their heart. In other words, it's full of abominations. And though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the whole congregation. In other words, sooner or later, it all comes out to his shame and to his embarrassment. Ultimately, what is in my heart is going to come out. It's going to come out. Isn't it wonderful how the longer we walk with the Lord, you begin your walk with the Lord and you say, oh Lord, deal with this sin in my life and help me not to talk so much, or help me not to say this thing, and then help me here and help me there. And pretty soon you realize, hey, well, I'm dealing with symptoms. The big problem is my heart here. And the older you get, the more you realize, oh Lord, change my heart. Purge that out of my heart. Lord, cleanse my heart. Give me right motives in my heart. And then the other things take care of themselves. Verse 27, whoever digs a pit will fall into it. And as you dig a pit to trap someone else, you're going to end up trapped. And he who rolls a stone, you're rolling it up a hill. In order to roll it down on someone else, you get about halfway up, and it's going to roll back on you. And so, don't plot evil against other people. It's going to backfire on you. And so, in the book of Esther, remember Haman, he built those gallows for Mordecai, and he ended up hung on those gallows. And you go to Israel about that time of the year, and in all the bakeries, you can buy Haman's ears. That's what they're called. They're a little cookie. And I always like the chocolate ones. They got the prune and all those fruit things. But I don't eat cookies to eat fresh fruit. So I get those chocolate ones. And I make sure there's plenty of them on the bus. When we're there, plenty for the fruit people, but plenty for the chocolate people too. And the whole city just rejoices over the deliverance that God brought and how he turned the whole thing around and how God is so faithful to do that. A lying tongue hates those who are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth works ruins. And so that lying tongue can crush and it can ruin people.